Okay, so welcome to another deep dive, you guys.
Yeah.
Today we're gonna look at something that was a huge issue in the early church in Corinth. And that's this question of what to do about food that has been sacrificed to idols.
Yeah, a big one.
So we're gonna be looking specifically at Paul's response to this in 1 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9.
Right.
And we've got a really fascinating lecture here by Dr. Gary Metters, who's going to help us break this down.
He really does a great job with this one.
Yeah, he does.
It's, yeah, it can be a little tricky, yeah. But I think he does a good job of explaining.
You know, for you, the listener, this is a way to really grasp, like pretty quickly, I think some really important things about how to navigate difficult issues.
Sure, sure.
Where what you believe bumps up against the needs of your community.
Yeah. You know, if you've ever wondered how to balance your own personal convictions with the well-being of the people around you,
yeah,
this ancient discussion that Paul gets into here provides some really relevant...
Yeah, like surprisingly relevant for us today.
I was really surprised by some of the stuff that came up.
Yeah, and I mean, it's always interesting to me.
Yeah.
Like how these ancient issues, like somehow,
yeah.
like are so...
Like we're still relevant to us.
Dealing with the same stuff.
Yeah, so think of this as your, like...
Absolutely.
Like your fast track...
Yeah.
...to understanding
mm-hmm.
what was going on in this pivotal moment
yeah.
in early church history.
A turning point, for sure.
And how we can apply that today.
Right.
So we're going to look at the tension between what, you know, the freedom that you have... And then how your choices kind of ripple out to affect other people.
Uh-huh.
All through the lens of Dr. Metters breaking down the scripture.
Yeah, I love the way he uses the grid analogy.
Yeah.
We'll get into that.
We will get into that. Yeah. So are you ready to jump in?
I think it's really helpful.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, so the big issue that Paul's dealing with in 1 Corinthians 8, you know, stems from how common pagan temples and idols were in Corinth.
Like everywhere.
It was a very pagan.
Very pagan city.
Okay.
And these weren't just like religious sites. These were like the center of social life.
Yeah.
The places where people would gather and have meals and
yeah.
like just hang out.
Yeah. Like the marketplace.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if the marketplace was also a temple.
Right. So food sacrifice to idols was everywhere.
Right.
And that's what makes it such a tricky situation.
Yeah. So you've got Christians there.
Yeah.
With different levels of comfort and understanding about this whole thing, right?
And Metters points this out.
Yeah.
You know the difference between the strong.
Right.
The ones who get it.
The ones who are like.
Who are like, yeah, okay.
Idols are nothing.
Idols are nothing.
This is just meat.
Just meat.
Right.
And then the weak.
Yeah.
Whose consciences were still really sensitive.
Yeah. They still felt like there was something.
Right. They felt like there was something spiritual going on.
Yeah.
When they ate the food.
So what's fascinating to me is that Paul comes right out of the gate in verse 9.
Yeah.
With a warning to those who are in that strong category.
Uh-huh.
To be careful about how they're exercising their freedom.
To be considerate.
Yeah, because it could become a stumbling block.
Yeah.
For somebody who is not quite there yet in their understanding.
His conscience is still tender.
Yeah. And Metters points out that this whole idea of rights or exousia,
right.
which is the Greek word that's used.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about liberty in general.
No.
It's likely that it was tied into social status in Corinth.
Yeah, because.
Because if you think about it.
If you were a wealthy or influential Christian.
Right.
You would have had the right.
Yeah.
And the social clout
yeah.
to participate in these meals at the temples.
Right. And so really like the key insight here
yeah.
is that our personal freedoms aren't absolute.
Right. They're always connected to.
They're always tethered to yeah. our responsibility.
To other people.
Toward other people in the community.
Absolutely.
And so just because you can do something
yeah.
doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. Just because you have the right or the right. social standing.
Doesn't mean it's.
Doesn't automatically mean it's the best thing.
The most helpful.
For everyone.
For the whole community.
Yeah.
Right. And so your personal freedom needs to be weighed against its potential effect on others.
Exactly.
Okay. So.
And that's where the weak come in.
Yeah.
Because if you're one of these strong Christians, you're like, hey,
right.
idols are fake. This is just meat.
Right.
No big deal.
Yeah.
But then you're seen eating in an idol temple.
Right.
That could really influence,
yeah.
embolden
yeah.
the weak believers.
Ones who
aren't quite there yet.
Yeah, aren't quite as far along.
In their understanding.
Yeah, in their understanding of.
Eat.
Food sacrificed to idols against their conscience.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where the real danger lies.
And the Metters uses a really great example here.
Okay.
Imagine you had like a bad experience with playing pool in the past.
Okay.
Right? Like something bad happened, you know, you got hustled or
okay, yeah.
whatever. And now someone's trying to pressure you to play.
Yeah.
Even if you know intellectually, like, okay, right. the game itself is fine.
Yeah.
It's harmless.
Right.
But the whole context yeah. brings up those negative feelings.
Right. You just pick
makes
up.
You feel uneasy.
Don't want to do it.
Like you're doing something wrong. And that's kind of how the weak believers would have felt.
Yeah, brace up their bell tender consciences.
Association.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Paul's in this really tricky spot, right?
Yeah.
He's trying to balance this knowledge that idols have no real power with this ethical responsibility that the strong have toward the weak.
And he's trying to shepherd this community.
Yeah, it's not about like condemning the food itself.
But it's about this potential harm that their actions could have on
and
others.
That's all about the impact on other people.
Right?
And that's what makes his discussion of conscience so interesting.
Okay, so this is where we get into like the meat of Metters'
yeah.
lecture, right?
This is good stuff.
So how does he understand
yeah.
conscience?
Well, he describes it not as some kind of judge
okay.
handing down verdicts,
okay,
but as an internal witness
okay.
to the norms and values that you recognize and live by.
Okay, so it's like a reflection of what you
yeah,
already believe.
Exactly. It's connected to your worldview.
Okay.
And your value system, what he calls the grid.
The grid. Okay,
yeah,
I love that.
That's a good one.
Okay, so explain this.
So your worldview
grid
and values create this framework
right.
through which you interpret everything.
Okay.
Make choices.
Right.
Your conscience is like an alarm system.
Okay.
If you think about doing something that clashes with that,
yeah.
with your established worldview and values,
yeah.
your conscience raises a red flag.
Right.
It witnesses to that conflict
okay.
and lets you know something's off.
Okay. So it's less like this external moral compass.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like a rule book.
And more like this internal reflection.
Exactly.
Of what you've come to believe and value.
It's an internal guide.
Yeah.
Wait, but here's the thing.
Okay.
This grit, this worldview.
Right.
It's not set in stone.
Right. It can change.
It can shift. And for Christians,
through learning,
conversion is this huge process
yeah.
of re-education.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your whole world is turned upside down.
Totally.
So in that transition,
right.
your conscience might still be aligned
right.
with your old way of seeing things.
Yeah. Like intellectually, you might grasp.
Right. You might get it up here. But
ask.
Your conscience
it's your gut.
Is still informed by your past.
Yeah.
So it might freak out.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you try to act on this new understanding. And Metters uses Paul as a perfect example of this.
Okay. So talk about that.
So before Paul became a Christian, yeah. he was persecuting Christians.
Yeah.
And his conscience was totally fine with it.
Right.
Because
yeah.
in his worldview at the time,
right.
they were a threat.
Yeah. He and thought he was...
to Judaism, doing the right thing.
He thought he was doing God's work.
Yeah.
So his conscience was working perfectly
right.
according to his understanding.
It wasn't broken. It was just...
It wasn't faulty.
Yeah.
It was in sync.
Working on the wrong...
with a flawed
confirmation
worldview.
Yeah. So a weak conscience
right.
isn't like a broken conscience.
It's not broken.
Yeah.
It just reflects
yeah.
a worldview that hasn't fully grasped mm-hmm. the truth.
Yeah. So the danger isn't necessarily eternal punishment
right.
for that person who eats.
Metters is really clear about this.
Yeah.
The danger is the damage
right.
it does to your discernment,
yeah.
to your ability to make good decisions. Right. You're sort of
messing with
your internal
God's design for how you navigate the world
right.
and figure out right from wrong.
Yeah. And so it's like if you keep ignoring your conscience,
yeah,
it's like you're
dulling the blade.
You're dulling the blade.
So it can't do its job.
You're damaging your ability to right. discern.
And that leads to Paul's strong warning
yeah.
to the strong.
To the strong in verse 13.
Yeah.
He says sinning against a brother or sister
right.
with a sensitive conscience is like sinning against Christ
uh-huh.
himself.
And for the weak,
right.
their sin is going against
their own understanding of what's right.
Based on their current worldview.
Based on their current worldview.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then we move into chapter 9.
Yeah. Paul shifts gears a bit here.
Yeah.
But it's all connected.
Yeah.
He uses his own life as an apostle.
Yeah.
To illustrate this idea of setting aside your rights. for the sake of the gospel
yeah.
and the good of the community.
Yeah. So he starts out by kind of giving his credentials.
Right. He's like, hey,
right.
I'm an apostle.
Yeah.
I've seen the Lord.
Right.
You Corinthians are proof of my ministry.
Yeah. You're the seal of my apostleship.
Right.
And Metters suggests that there might be a little connection back to those elite folks in chapter 8.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah. Like Paul being a Roman citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not.
He's got his own status.
Yeah, he's got status.
He's not just some nobody.
Right. And so it's like he's maybe gently pushing back.
Right.
On their.
Don't get too big for your britches.
Sense of superiority.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because on the surface, it might seem like a contradiction.
Yeah. You're like, wait a minute.
Right.
In chapter 8, he's saying.
Don't use your rights.
Don't use your rights.
And then in chapter 9.
Now he's talking about his rights.
Yeah. But what Metters is saying is that.
Right.
Paul's not saying.
He's not saying you shouldn't have rights.
Right.
He's saying you should.
You should know when to set them aside.
Yeah. Be willing to.
Right.
Lay them down when yeah. it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. So then he asks a bunch of questions.
Yeah, right.
To make his point.
Rhetorical questions.
Rhetorical questions.
Yeah.
About what he and the other apostles are entitled to.
Well, like, don't we have the right to food and drink?
Food and drink.
To take a believing wife with us?
A believing wife.
Yeah, right. To not have to work for a living.
Right. Like, shouldn't the churches support us?
Right. And mm-hmm. Metters points out that Paul uses all these analogies to yeah. back this up.
Yeah.
Like, it's soldiers, vineyard keepers,
yeah.
shepherds.
Right.
He even quotes the Old Testament law about not muzzling an ox while it's threshing,
right.
showing that God cares yeah, for those who work.
Yeah, even the animals.
Right.
Right.
But here's the key thing.
Okay.
Verse 12.
Yeah.
He says, but we did not use this right.
But we did not use this right.
That's the whole point.
Yeah, like he could have.
He could have.
But he didn't.
He chose not to.
Right.
And he explains why.
Yeah, he says.
So as to not hinder the gospel of Christ.
Right. So as not to hinder the gospel.
And he also talks about this unique sense of accomplishment
right.
he has in sharing the gospel without expecting anything in return.
Right. And this is where Metters brings in this idea of duty versus going above and beyond.
Yeah, I love this.
Yeah.
So preaching the gospel.
Right.
That was Paul's duty.
Yeah, that was his job.
That was his calling.
Right.
He doesn't get extra credit.
Right.
For doing his job.
Right. But going above and beyond.
Choosing to do it without taking support.
Right.
That's where the reward comes in.
That's where the reward comes in.
And his reward is offering the gospel freely.
Right.
Not being dependent
right.
on his listeners for his livelihood.
Yeah. So it's this act of giving up his entitlements,
yeah.
his privileges.
Voluntarily. That's yeah. where the real reward is. Mm.
That's the point he's trying to make.
Yeah.
Yeah, so powerful.
Such a powerful example for us.
Yeah. Okay, so then he goes on to talk about how he deliberately chooses
right.
to become all things to all people.
To the Jews, I became as a Jew.
Right, to the Jews as a Jew.
To those under the law,
yeah.
I became as one under the law.
Even though he wasn't under the law.
Right. So, to those not having the law,
right.
I became as one not having the law.
Right.
But I'm still under Christ's law.
Right.
To the weak, I became weak.
Right, so he's saying like...
I'm trying to meet people where... Where they're at.
Yeah.
Connect with them.
Yeah.
On their level.
And Metters is careful to point out that these are
cultural adjustments.
It's a cultural adjustment.
Not moral compromises.
Right. So he wasn't changing his core beliefs.
No, his core beliefs are solid.
But he was adapting his approach.
Right. His
methods.
Right.
To be more effective.
Exactly. He wanted to be as effective yeah. as possible.
Yeah. And Metters gives this really funny example.
Yeah. About a church picnic.
A church picnic, right.
And how different generations
mm-hmm.
had totally different expectations
right.
about what a church picnic should be like.
Should be like.
You know, yeah. like the older folks wanted like a potluck.
Like the covered dishes.
Yeah, and the younger people were like, yeah. we want like a barbecue
yeah.
with games and stuff.
And it's just funny how...
And it created this tension.
Yeah, how these like...
But it's a great example...
Sort of cultural clashes.
Of how we need to be willing yeah. to adapt.
Yeah, to meet people where they're at.
And be flexible.
Yeah.
Especially on things that aren't...
That aren't central.
Central to the faith.
To the faith, yeah. Like, who cares if we have a potluck or a barbecue?
Right, exactly. Yeah. As long as we're together.
As long as we're together.
Or we're loving each other.
Right, yeah. And then Paul wraps up this whole section
yeah.
with this really powerful image.
The runner.
The runner.
In a race.
Yeah. He compares himself to an athlete. who's in training.
Training hard.
And he talks about
disciplining himself.
Disciplining himself.
So he's not disqualified.
Yeah. After having preached to others.
Yeah.
And Metters connects this back to the idea of earning rewards
mm-hmm.
by going beyond just the bare minimum.
It's like getting an A in school.
Yeah.
You have to do more than just show up.
Yeah. You got to go above and beyond.
You got to put in the effort.
Yeah.
Okay. So to bring it all together for you.
Yeah.
We've seen how important it is to think about how our actions affect other people.
Especially those.
Especially those who might see things differently.
See things differently than we do.
Than we do. And we've looked at this crucial difference between having a right and choosing to use it.
It's not about not having rights.
Right.
It's about using them wisely.
Yeah. And we've gained a much deeper understanding, I think, of conscience.
That grid analogy is so helpful.
It really is.
It's not a judge.
Yeah.
It's a witness.
It's a witness shaped by our beliefs and values.
Yeah. And we've seen this powerful example of Paul giving up his legitimate rights.
Laying them down for the sake of the gospel and the unity of the community.
Yeah. And so this raises a really important question, I think, for you.
For all of us.
For all of us to consider.
Where in our lives?
Yeah. Where are you?
Are we clinging to our rights?
Yeah.
In a way that might be.
Yeah. Are you putting a stumbling block?
Creating a stumbling block.
Yeah. In front of somebody.
For other people.
Even if you're not doing anything.
Even if it's not inherently wrong.
That you think is inherently wrong.
Right.
And how can understanding this whole idea of conscience as a witness change the way that you interact?
How we approach those who disagree with us.
With different opinions.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
It's a big challenge.
To think about.
What's so relevant.
Yeah, and really, you know, what's striking to me, how much this example of Paul's self-sacrifice applies to us today.
It's timeless.
As we navigate these really complex social and ethical issues.
Like, how do we live in a pluralistic society where everybody's got different beliefs, different values?
Yeah, and so this is just the start of our exploration.
We're just getting started.
We're going to be diving deeper into 1 Corinthians 10 next time.
We're going to unpack that.
And we'll continue our discussion about conscience.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
I'm looking forward to it.
I am too.
All right.
See you then.
See you later.